Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Giselle Haftel as my special expert guest. Giselle received her bachelor's degree in psychology from the University of Texas at Austin. She is currently pursuing her master's degree in dietetics and nutrition at Florida International University. Giselle is the branch manager for the Florida Division of Wellness Concepts, a company that provides interactive nutrition education to corporations. Giselle was a competitive gymnast for 13 years. She is highly involved in sports nutrition and is an active member of the International Society of Sports Nutrition, for which she has lectured on various occasions. Giselle lectures to athletes, parents, and professionals on the prevention and treatment of eating disorders. She teaches children and adolescents how to eat for optimal athletic performance and emphasizes the importance of eating and exercising for overall health and disease prevention. Ms. Haftel strongly believes in preventive health care, utilizing both Western and Eastern practices. Good morning, Giselle, and thanks very much for participating as my special expert guest on this edition of SNU.
Sure, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
You know, I'm sure everyone wants to know right off the bat why you developed an interest in psychology and how you came to work in the sports nutrition, health, and fitness field.
Sure. Well, my initial interest was actually nutrition. It was always nutrition. Being that I had been a competitive gymnast for so long, it was just, you know, part of my everyday life. When I got to college to do my undergrad work, I took one class and, funny enough, didn't enjoy it. Looking back, it just wasn't the right time for me. And so I developed this interest in psychology. I think back then I was just more interested in how people think and why they do what they do or don't do what they do. So I majored in psychology. I enjoyed it tremendously, but I still, you know, I still had that hunger, I think, for nutrition. So for a few years I worked, and then eventually I went back to school, and I'm, you know, still pursuing my master's, which I'll be done with shortly. And I think what happened is that I was still, I kind of saw that it's all about the whole mind-body connection. It's not just why do people think certain things or they don't. I believe the body is just amazing, and so I found this need to learn how to be as best as I could be to it, to prevent disease and pass this on to other people. And then the progression to sports nutrition was just natural because it had been my life for so long. So now it's definitely one of my interests and something that I love to do and to, you know, teach or help out with.
Now, in reference to the psychology of nutrition, mm-hmm. our perception of food and how it affects our lives, what have you learned through studying psychology and then examining that and considering that in relation to how food impacts people and their perception of what that is? What are some of the things that are really striking?
Well, I believe, first of all, when we're born, when we're infants, we have such a natural ability to know when we're full, know when we're hungry, and know what's good for us and what our bodies need. We know how to cry and, you know, how long to cry for those things and when to turn our heads and not eat anymore. And I think that as we get older, we lose that ability. And anxiety comes into play and stress and so many other reasons for eating other than hunger or any other, you know, physiological need if it's a disease state. And so that to me, you know, learning that to me was kind of striking. And then I wanted to apply it to myself. There's a book, it's a great book out there called Intuitive Eating, and it's really about teaching people to go back to this, to not eat out of stress or anxiety or anything that's going on in our lives, the psychological aspect, but more to just, you know, go with what we feel and give our bodies that, because our bodies tell us everything. So that was kind of an eye-opener for me when I first got into the field.
Now you're the branch manager for the Florida Division of Wellness Concepts, which promotes interactive nutrition education programs to corporations. Can you tell us what the corporate response to these programs has been and what effect it has, like the program has had on employees?
Sure. I mean, at least here in the United States, we've seen that since the 1980s, there's been a huge increase in worksite wellness programs, especially in the last few years. Employers have seen that there's, you know, they're bringing in programs and maintaining healthier employees positively affects the company's bottom line. Insurance premiums go down because employees require less medical treatment, which here in the United States is still expensive. But I completely believe that a healthier employee is happier and is more productive. So the response has been very, very positive. Our company originated in New York in 1999. They have over 80 accounts over there, so it's pretty positive. Since then, we've spread to different states here. And here in Florida, our branch has been growing fairly quickly since September of last year. So
you think that the influence of the programs that you're providing is making a difference to the wellness and state of the employees in the corporations?
I believe so. I mean, we don't have statistics yet. That's something that we're going to be working on. But we do get feedback a lot from the employees, and we give them evaluation forms at the end of each program. And, you know, it seems very, I guess, elementary to us, but, you know, even when they tell us, you know, I didn't understand why it was so important to eat whole wheat bread over white or processed grains, or, you know, I hear about trans fats in the media all the time now, but they didn't know what they were. So now they understand, or maybe they now understand the importance of increasing omega-3s in your diet. So they tell us personally. It's personal feedback, or we get emails, or just from the evaluation forms. And our next step, like I said, is to actually get statistics on the success of the program.
I heard a program on the news today where they are implementing changes in New York City, which is enforcing bans of food consumption that have trans fats in them. Have you heard anything about that?
Yes, I actually did hear about it. I know that it's apparently, from what I understood, it's very individual, state by state. Here in Florida, the ban has not taken place yet, but they have asked some restaurant owners in different places to voluntarily remove trans fats. And I believe that in New York, it's going to happen as of 2008. So apparently, it's becoming sort of a problem for restaurant owners because they think, you know, it's kind of too soon, but I'm thrilled about it.
Yeah, I bet you we all can look forward to improvements in that direction. That's a good thing.
Absolutely. I think it's great.
So now let's get into your gymnastics career. How did 13 years of competitive gymnastics affect your personal health? And what impact does gymnastics have on the body of, I guess, the girls and the guys that are participating?
Mm-hmm. Well, as far as personal health, I mean, it definitely takes a toll on your body. You know, I mean, 13 years of hard landings from high places, you know, takes a toll on your knees. I personally had knee injuries and back injuries, wrist. I had nothing serious. It was more of chronic pain. But I believe that it also does a lot of good for kids, especially kids today where, you know, so many kids are just in front of the computer all the time and not playing outside like we used to when we were not involved in a sport. So, yes, it is tough on the body. It's very tough mentally as well because of the pressure of the sport, as with any sport, you know, when you're in a high level. You know, and this is a sport which there's the incidence of eating disorders is very high in this sport because, you know, especially girls are in leotards from a very young age. They're being judged, and we become aware of our bodies probably a lot earlier, in my opinion, than other girls would. You know, when you're around other girls and comparing all the time. So overall, I think it's actually a very good sport. I think it's just, you know, and this opens a whole other issue, but I think it's really about, it's a parent's responsibility and a coach's responsibility. At that age, the kids are just too young to be responsible for themselves, I think.
So their eating habits have to be monitored by the coaches and the parents, and we have to keep an open eye for that?
Of course. I mean, coaches often, and, you know, I can't speak from, I had a great coach, but coaches can be very abusive, whether they're trying to be or not, and they don't really realize how strong the influences that they have on their kids. I mean, I used to look up to my coach so much, and I'm sure so many athletes do as well, and what they say, you know, you really take it to heart. So one negative comment, like, you should lose some weight, or, you know, you would tumble that much better if you were a little bit lighter. That's all we want when we're little is to, you know, in my case, be a great gymnast and be a better tumbler and faster and lighter. So we really take that to heart. And it's a sport where a majority of the girls who are successful, I think with any sport, share a lot in common. They're type A's, they're perfectionists, they're high achievers. And so anything that we do, you know, 5 pounds is not 5 pounds. It becomes 10 and 15, and you're doing better and better until your body you know, gives away almost. But it's definitely, I think, a coach's and a parent's responsibility at that age. You know, when the kids get older, you can start telling them when they're teenagers or a little bit older, you know, how dangerous eating disorders can be and how important it is to feed your body. But when they're younger, it's absolutely a kid's and a parent's responsibility. I think even well into their teens.
I guess when the kids are young, they're not really thinking body composition. They're just thinking weight. So how do they lose weight? Do they just simply stop eating and, you know, miss meals like these young girls in gymnastics?
Well, it depends. I mean, there's different types of eating disorders. There's the girls that, you know, experience anorexia more than bulimia. And anorexia is basically different levels of self-starvation, whether it's really just restricting meals or skipping meals or sometimes going days without eating. And then there's the people that participate in bulimia, which is you eat, but you either purge through self-induced vomiting or use of laxatives. Then there's the people that are bulimics but don't, they're not purging bulimics. They simply either over-exercise. You know, they're very good at knowing exactly what's been put into their bodies. So if they put in 1,500 calories, they're going to burn off 1,500 calories. So there's different types of eating disorders that we see in athletes.
How do you know if you have an eating disorder that's clinical and perhaps yet not diagnosed versus a disordered eating or an erratic eating behavior? How do you know if you have one or the other?
Well, I think when we're looking at athletes, for example, if they've been healthy for a while and all of a sudden you're picking up on behaviors like they're eating secretively, they're always making up excuses as to why they can't eat around you, or when they do eat around you, they're playing with their food, but not a lot of it is going into their mouths, or you see more of the symptoms on their bodies. You might see a lot of, they become very hairy. It's called lanugo hair, and it's just a way for the body to conserve heat because they've become so small. So it's a way of keeping them warm. You see hair starts to fall out a lot of times. Obviously, you see them losing a lot of weight. So that's more of a mental issue. It's not that something is wrong physiologically. I mean, it is believed that there may be a physiological component to eating disorders, but what we do know for sure is that it's definitely a mental disorder.
So
it's defined as a mental disorder.
I know you've put a lot of time and research into this area. What have you discovered about these people? What is the struggle when someone is so anorexic that they're literally emaciated in front of the mirror and yet they see themselves as being fat? What is going on inside that person's brain?
You know, there's so many things that are going on. Yes, low self-esteem could be an issue. Depression could be an issue. Anxiety disorders. And how they originate, you know, there's different theories. The one that I've studied more and that I believe makes a lot of sense is that there's a genetic propensity, and it's not like there's a gene that codes for an eating disorder, but it's a gene that may encode for some sort of obsessive personality, you know? For example, there's a study that showed that daughters of fathers who were alcoholics were that much more prone to developing bulimia than daughters of parents who were not. So there's some sort of genetic component, I believe. Then there's a certain personality, like we mentioned before. It's type A's, it's overachievers. A lot of times it's people in higher economic environments, you know, and this brings me to the next component, which is the environment. We see it a lot in athletes or in kids who are in really high-level classes in school, places where you are trying to achieve something at a very high level. And then finally, there's a trigger that sets all this off. So to just say that it's self-esteem or, you know, or an anxiety issue or that you had controlling parents, I think is would be simplifying it a lot. I think there's just a lot of components that go with this. But when you finally see somebody with an eating disorder, there's just so many mental distortions that are going on. They'll look at themselves, like you said, and they look fat. And a lot of it is just lack of self-love and feeling that they don't mean enough, you know, and they're going to sacrifice whatever it is to get to what they want in order to maybe gain some sort of recognition and you know, feel like they finally did something good. Does it make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, what has your experience been with the women or men who were diagnosed clinically with this problem and overcame it and actually became somewhat normal again? What approach did they take and what happened in their lives and how did they overcome this struggle?
I think that for the most part, and this is very general, when somebody is having an issue like this, as with a drug addiction or an alcohol addiction, you need to hit rock bottom, you know? You need to hit rock bottom, feel really, really low to really seek help and feel like something's got to change. If not, I'm not going to make it. And so what happens at that point is whether a parent has intervened or a coach has intervened or friends or they realize it themselves is if it's a very severe case and they need to be treated in an inpatient facility. And that's usually for people that have very, very low weight and who have other chronic conditions like cardiac conditions or, you know, renal or gastrointestinal, something like that. Always the treatment is going to be both nutritional and psychiatric. It's a must, and it should be a team effort. You know, the both professionals should know each other and know what's going on with the person, because the eating disorder is really not about food in the least bit. It's all about all the other mental and emotional issues that are going on, and food is just the way that it manifests itself. And then when cases are less severe, then people can be treated in an outpatient facility. So they go and they see a dietitian and they see a psychiatrist. Again, they should work together, but the person does not have to be hospitalized or put in an institution.
What about orthomolecular medicine and orthomolecular psychiatry, where physicians are really into food as medicine and dietary supplements? What kinds of approaches do they provide or encourage? Like, are there any specific supplements or nutrients that are encouraged to use as the medicine to treat some of these conditions?
Well, from what I've read, there's a lot of studies that have pointed at the relationship between depression and lack of omega-3s in the body. And so being that depression is such a strong component of eating disorders, I believe that treating, you know, suggesting to patients that they eat a diet that's much higher in omega-3s than what they're eating, and explain to them, obviously, what it is and what the importance of the ratio of omega-6s to omega-3s is very, very important. So I believe that it should all be a multidisciplinary sort of treatment. I think that omega-3s are very, very necessary, and they've proven to be useful. They've seen that, you know, people who are depressed who are starting to eat a diet higher in omega-3s actually start to do better. And they've also seen in other studies the other way around that a lot of people who are so depressed are lacking in omega-3s. And nowadays, especially in the Western world, we see that instead of having this 1-to-1 ratio of omega-6s to omega-3s, we have more of a 10-to-1. That's huge. So, yes, I do believe that it's very important to encourage people to eat more omega-3s and whole foods in general. I mean, worst comes to worst. If studies years from now say that, you know what, after all, omega-3s and other whole foods have no effect on improving depression, we've seen that they help with many other conditions, like heart disease. So it's a win-win in my eyes.
Do you think a lifetime, and I mean maybe a short lifetime, maybe 6 to 12 years of age, like for a kid, eating nothing but refined processed food? You know the way kids are raised in America with SpaghettiOs and refined breakfast cereals and cow's milk and chocolate bars and potato chips. Do you think that makes people more susceptible to depression and emotional disorders?
Right away, I would say yes. I think it could have an effect. I haven't seen data on it, so I'm a little reluctant to say yes or no. However, I think that what we put in our bodies from the moment we're born affects the rest of our lives. And so, yes, here in America, kids eat a lot of processed foods and a lot of fast foods. And I don't think that it's just going to have a physiological effect. I think it affects everything about them, and I wouldn't see why depression wouldn't be, you know, another consequence, but I haven't seen studies yet that show those results.
Now, Tracy and I met you at the ISSN conference in Las Vegas, and we were impressed by your cheery attitude and by your obvious connection to health and nutrition and vitality, and you came across very positive.
Thank you.
What do you do yourself to stay well? Because sometimes there's a criticism towards health practitioners that don't live the life. They talk the life, but they don't live the life. What do you do to stay well yourself personally?
Well, I definitely believe that in this field, you've got to practice what you preach, and you've got to lead by example. what I do is I definitely eat a variety of foods, and I believe in balance. I think extremes are dangerous in any way, whether it's with food or exercise. Basically, as far as food, I don't have a strict diet, but I make sure every day I try my hardest to get the things that I know that I need, you know, fruits, especially berries, which are high in antioxidants, vegetables, good fats, like fats from fish and nuts and seeds. But I also allow myself, you know, if I feel like chocolate once in a while, I'm going to have it. Because it's also about having fun and about, like we said before, giving your body what it needs at the time. Now, as far as exercise, I think exercise is so crucial. You know, when I left gymnastics, I was like, what am I going to do now? You know, what am I going to do that's as fun and as rewarding? And so I exercised for a while, but as of 2 summers ago, I started training for sprint triathlons, which are shorter distances, but they're fun and they're intense, and you get to train your body. You cross-train, so you're training different muscles. You're not really abusing anything. I mean, I think I abuse running a little bit, and it's not great. And that's probably because of the effect that it has on your mind. I mean, it's great for clearing your mind and for staying positive. So that's basically my routine. I try to not be too rigid right now if I'm not training for a competition or something, which right now I'm not. But I find myself running or doing some sort of intense cardiovascular workout probably on average about 5 times a week. And I think that right now, like I said before, it's more about how your mind feels, you know, when you do exercise. I mean, of course, the effects on the body are great, but it helps the mind a lot.
What's your take on weight training or resistance training for women?
I think it's very, very important. You know, I myself don't lift a lot, but I definitely do some resistance training because, as we've seen, I mean, lean body mass keeps you leaner because it requires a lot more energy to maintain it than fat does. And so, you know, personally, my taste is I don't want to look like a bodybuilder, but I see the importance of resistance training, so I participate in it.
And what do you recommend to women who don't have eating disorders but maybe are out of shape? What approach do you recommend for someone who is maybe mid-30s, is out of shape completely, has a crazy diet, but they know they're not well and they want to lose some body fat? How do you get these women to start?
I think you just have to tell them to do it very slowly and little by little. They can't expect to change years of negative habits, you know, in one day, but maybe to start walking, even if it's 20 minutes a day, 3 times a week, and start increasing that. And, you know, as far as food, also making small changes at a time. I think when you overwhelm somebody by saying, these are all the changes that you have to make, and this is how much you have to exercise now all the time, it's just too much. It's overwhelming for anybody. Little by little, and increase little at a time. And then we've seen, and then studies have also shown, that when people start exercising, their cravings are also different. It's almost like, you know, the exercise comes before, but your body's asking you for different things. So I think that if you start very little and incorporate some sort of exercise routine, no matter how little it is, and then build on that.
What are some of the supplements that you like and take yourself and or recommend to others as staple supplements?
I don't take a lot of supplements. I take a multivitamin every day. I take calcium, you know, twice a day. You got to separate the dose. And I take fish oil or sometimes flax oil. I kind of switch back and forth between the two. It's not that I don't believe. I don't take them myself very much. I feel that ideally we'd be able to get everything from food. That's what some people say. But I think that we all have busy lives and we don't just sit in a kitchen all day doing nothing but eating. So I think that a multivitamin helps. I think fish oil is one of the greatest gifts. And I think calcium is very important for women. So as of now, that's what I take. The more I learn, maybe the more things will change. But right now, that's where I'm at with supplements.
And what are your thoughts on what the ISSN is doing and how sports nutrition is moving forward into curriculum in universities?
I'm a big supporter of the ISSN. I mean, I think it's a great organization. It's made up of people that are very forward thinkers and think outside the box, and they're not afraid to, you know, put the latest research out there, no matter what, you know, the more conservative organizations may think. And I think that in adding sports nutrition to organizations or institutions, schools that don't have it is great. I mean, first of all, we have a lot of athletes who just don't know what to eat before, during, or after, or what's going on in your body. And so I think it's very, very important, and I think the ISSN is doing a great job at, you know, putting the word out there and sharing the research.
Another aspect is for women that are aging. What approach do you recommend for, say, the geriatric group, say someone like your mother or your grandmother, when it comes to health and preventive medicine and dealing with all the ramifications of health issues that affect women? Is it just a general approach, or do you need to get specific with each person and itemize the lifestyle?
I think that nutrition for any age group is specific. I think that no two bodies work the same way, and especially for women who are getting older, definitely consult a doctor first. You know, I don't always believe exactly, you know, sometimes doctors are quick to say or prescribe, you know, I think it's a great field, but get an opinion from a doctor, maybe visit a dietitian, see if you believe more in natural medicine, then definitely I would suggest to seek, you know, help from that, kind of that branch of medicine. Not, you know, it depends on what a person believes in, but I think definitely seek some advice first, and then, you know, exercise as much as your body can take, as much as is recommended. I feel like it's a great time to exercise when we're aging and when hormone levels are changing and when our bones are getting older. You know, resistance training is great for bone strength. So just because we're getting older, I think it's the other way around. It's not the time to sit and just say, well, I'm getting old and my bones are getting weak. People need to be educated on the benefits of exercise and healthy eating and why not to smoke, you know, instead of saying, well, I'm getting old, I've done my thing, now I can do, you know, as I please.
Do you think things are getting better or worse right now when it comes to health in America?
I'd like to think that it's getting better. I think as a whole, statistically, we're seeing that it's not. I mean, obviously the obesity epidemic is huge and it's only growing, but it's nice to see that some steps are being taken. For example, the possible ban of trans fats in some states, like we're seeing in New York, or all the programs that the government is offering or backing up. But I think it's, you know, we live in a country that is just driven by money and marketing, and it's very tough. It's almost like you're fighting these beasts, and all you can do is, you know, believe in your field and try to educate. But is the problem getting better? I don't think as a whole it's getting better yet. But I think that there's really good efforts out there.
Good stuff. Well, our time is gone, Giselle. And thanks very much for your comments and your expertise and for being my special guest on this edition of SNU.
Sure. Thank you. It was great and it was fun.
Do you have a website that you would recommend to our listeners where they could learn something more about yourself or the corporate seminars that you do?
Sure. We actually, our website is coming up in the next few weeks, so just be on the lookout for it. But it's www.well, and it's WELL-concepts.com. And everything about our company and our personal bios is in there, and so please definitely take a look and see what we do, and feel free to contact me.
Awesome. So that's www.well-concepts.com.
Right. Concepts is plural with an S at the end.
Excellent. Okay. So we've had the pleasure of speaking with Giselle Haftel. Giselle, we thank you very much.
Thank you, Corey. Have a great day.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Representing lifestyle, new way of life. Listen, it's SNU, sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight, Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life, Live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHolly.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.